In this episode, I sit down with a dividend investor. We talk about the benefits of dividend investing, why you should get started sooner than later, and some of his picks when it comes to dividend stocks. Hi, my name is Kanwal Sarai, and welcome to the Simply Investing Dividend Podcast. My guest today is Russ Knopf, the creator of the website Dapper Dividends and his YouTube channel of the same name. Russ served in the U.S. Navy and today lives near Chicago with his wife and two kids. Russ is a dividend investor, so naturally, we discuss dividend investing in today's episode. Russ, welcome to the Simply Investing Dividend Podcast.
Thank you so very much for having me. Thank you.
Well, it is an honor to have you on our podcast today. We're going to talk about dividends, dividend stocks, talk about investing. So I'm so happy that you're here. We're going to have a conversation. Let's get started with my first question here. So I took a look at your website, and the very first thing on the website, it says that you want to help people become better dividend investors. So my question is why?
Well, because I'm trying to help myself become a better dividend investor, and I feel sharing what I'm learning, if it's something that people are interested in, as you know, some of you have watched me and seen me before, as I say, and I've found out passive income is a hell of a drug, and it's just something that you love getting, you love receiving it. I know it was, I think Rockefeller had said he loved seeing his dividend checks roll in, and now I understand why, because when you're not doing anything additional and you have income coming in, you know, it's just such a great feeling to know that you have money out there working and multiplying itself. So I've started this in earnest, being a pretty involved dividend investor about late 2019 and started the channel in mid 2020, April, actually 2020. So right about 4 years ago. But I just really enjoy talking to people and sharing what I'm learning. And I've evolved quite a bit. You know, we can get into that. So that's part of it. I feel that by me sharing what I'm doing, other people can learn, hopefully, from some of my mistakes. Because what better way to learn than through the mistakes of others and the experiences of others? So that's the nutshell version of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with what you said, the feeling of getting the dividends. It's incredible. It is truly, to me, that is truly passive income, because I'm going to buy the shares and then I'm going to just hold on to those shares. And some of the shares I've held on for 15, 20 years now, and the dividends keep coming in and they keep coming in and they keep growing, right? We're going to talk about dividend increases in a little while and they just keep growing. So what was the, was there one point in your life or was it a series of things that got you interested in dividends?
Oh, it was a series, Kanwal. It was a series of things. It was somewhere around 2018, and I don't remember the exact reason why. All of a sudden, I think I heard some news or whatever, news blurb about the market, and it just hit me out of the blue. You know what? I think I'm going to learn how to trade stocks, and it's probably going to take me like a year or so, but by then, I'm going to do well, and I'm going to be able to just quit my job and be kind of, you know, like Wolf of Wall Street. No, it didn't work. I started with penny stocks, which was my foot in the door. And thankfully, that a lot of people, the problem with newer investors, as you probably know, is that they get involved in penny stocks. They buy something they have no idea what they're buying. Kind of like I did with NIO, ticker NIO. And all I remember is that I read, I think it was on, well, I don't remember where I read it, but it was a new IPO. And I didn't even know anything about IPOs. I didn't know that there was a 6-month period after an IPO where the initial investors, before it went public, that they couldn't sell. They're prohibited from selling. And then a lot of them got in at just super low prices. And a lot of early investors, it's a way for them to realize gains and just dump the shares on the market. So a lot of times, 6 months in, things just have, they struggle when they're IPOs, because that's a way that the, you know, like I said, your early investors get money. But yeah, NIO was one. So my due diligence on that one, I read that it was the Tesla of China. Sold. I bought it just on that. I was like, good enough for me. But yeah, never looked at, well, they're not making money. They've never made money. They're burning cash. It's a lot harder to project something like that. Now you can make a lot more reward, but the risk is greater in my opinion. So yeah, anyway, so NIO was one of the ones that kind of snowballed into, they went up and I bought more and more. And then it just started going down and down and down. And I kept averaging down and averaging down. And then I started losing sleep because of it. And it was just one morning. There's an app called StockTwits. And it's kind of a degenerate playground. It's like a Twitter of investing talk. And it's pretty sophomoric sometimes. You get a laugh, but sometimes there's okay information. But anyway, so 4 a.m. here where I'm at in Chicago is when the pre-market starts. So I was up 4 a.m. so nervous, like, you know, I want to see if my stock's going up. What's going to happen today? And I was losing sleep. And that's no bueno. There's a phrase, sleep well at night, swan. Yeah, I was doing the opposite of swan. I was not sleeping well at night. So one of the things, my grandfather was an amateur, you know, retail investor. And I remember one time, never really got into it with him because I was young and there was more things on my mind than investing when you're, you know, 12, 15, 16, girls and video games. But he said one time, and I remembered, he said, you know, I like Walmart and AT&T because they pay good dividends. And thankfully, I remembered that. So as I was there, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning, I Googled dividends, just that. And, you know, kind of like The Adventures of Alice in Wonderland, I went down the rabbit hole and I'm kind of still down here. So that's where it the beginning, the genesis of it. And then obviously, you know, I even tried swing trading individual positions. And it was then, I think Merck was one of them, where I was swing trading Merck. And in that period of swing trading it, which I was terrible at swing trading, but I received a dividend from Merck. And I was kind of like, oh, I didn't even know they paid a dividend. I'm like, look at that. I just got money from doing nothing. So I liked that feeling much better. Dividend investing. It turns out I'm kind of like a vice grip investor, where I just am really good at holding on to things too long, almost to a fault, because I still have AT&T and Leggett and Platt, which we can talk about those later. But anyway, so I found out that with dividend investing, that all you have to really do is just buy and hold. And, you know, if you buy something good and you buy right, then hopefully you're never going to have to sell. So it just worked. And here I am.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that story. That's it's an incredible story. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. Mine was similar, right? I got into, started trading stocks, had no idea what I was doing, just reading online and kind of just went whatever I thought was cool, what was interesting. Nortel is the big failure that I talk about on my channel. I don't know if some of your audience might be too young to remember Nortel.
I don't remember. Right? Was that your first dividend stock?
Yeah, it was. I don't even think they paid a dividend. Maybe they did, but I had no clue. Mm-hmm. This was right before the tech bubble burst in 2000, 99 and 2000. And this, I'll keep the story short. The stock had peaked at around $120 a share. I bought some because everybody was telling me to buy Nortel. The stock dropped to $80. I bought some more. Dropped to $60. I bought some more. Dropped it to $40. I bought some more. And long story short, the company went bankrupt. Stocks were worth nothing. Now, luckily, I was young many years ago. I think I only total investment was maybe $2,000-$3,000, but that was a valuable lesson for me. Right? I'm like, wait a minute, and so that's. You know, anyways, I'll save my story for another episode, but I kind of got into the same way as you did with dividends. And it is not a very sexy topic. Everybody wants to talk about IPOs. They want to talk about crypto, EV stocks, NEO, an EV company, and all of those things. So dividends tend to be sort of boring and dull, but yet you found success with it. What are some of the things that you look for? Because there's a lot of dividend stocks. Some of them are good, some of them not so good. So what do you look for? How do you decide what to invest in?
Well, it's as I've learned, it's you have to look at the business. You have to buy the business. Don't chase yield, chase profits. It's all about the underlying business that should happen to be paying a good dividend. Where a lot of time, and again, that was a mistake I made, just buying the dividend, looking for that yield, and not looking at something that was, you know, less than a 1% yield, like a Costco, like a Visa. Oh, by the way, you reminded me of something when you said dot-com bubble. It just popped in my head. Valuation also matters. If you just buy at any price, that's crazy. That's like saying, I want to buy that business. Well, what are you willing to pay? Just tell me a price, whatever it is. I'll buy it. Like Cisco was one. Yeah. So Cisco was super hot. It was the NVIDIA of the dot-com bubble, and it still has not gotten back to where it was before the crash. So if you would have bought at, I think $77 was its high, because it did a 2-for-1 split. It had gotten so big that they split the stock 2-for-1, but $77 is after the split, still hasn't got back there. So you would still be down had you bought in 2000. It was May of 2000, whatever it was. So valuation does matter. You can't just buy any business at any price. But honestly, the simplest thing I would tell anybody that's trying to learn or wants a better way of thinking about it is kind of, you can be attracted by the dividend, right? Kind of like if you're a fish in the water and you see something glittering in the distance, well, don't just go and eat it. You're going to want to investigate that thing because it could be a fisherman, like the yield trap, you know, it's going to hook you and you're going to be out of money. But what I would say is just look at the profits. Are there revenue? Is there revenue growing? Is there, free cash flow growing, earnings per share? That can be, that might be a little too much talking about how that can be financially manipulated, which is why I like free cash flow much better. Plus the dividend is paid out of free cash flow. So I would just boil that down because I'll just talk all night, is to just look at the profitability, look for the quality of the business that is paying the dividend, because if the business sucks, well, then the dividend's going to probably be cut or potentially go away. And if bankruptcy happens, well, it's most certainly going away. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are all great tips. I mean, that is, to me, that is the fundamentals. I wish they would teach this in school to everybody. So people would know how to invest, especially the younger kids, students coming out of school, because what you talked about is so important, whereas I think a lot of people get caught up at just looking at the stock price. Oh, well, the stock price has gone up 20% this week, right? Oh, it went up another 30% today. And I think the focus, like you said, is the free cash flow. Geraldine Wace said it the best. She's known as the great dame of dividends. She talked about dividends 60, 70 years ago. And she said the earnings can be manipulated, but the dividend is paid out of cash. You can't fake the dividend. You either pay it or you don't. That is so key to what you said, is to look at a company's free cash flow and what is the dividend. The thing I look for, and everybody's different, I want to look at the last 20-year track record. I want to see, has the dividend been growing or is it dropping or is it just completely random? So we want to see a good trend over the last 20 years that the dividend's going up. A lot of people listening to this episode are sitting on the sidelines, right? They're scared to invest. And even if you listen to the news or read the news online, everything just seems scary. The interest rates have gone up, especially the last 18 months. Interest rates have skyrocketed. Are we going to have a recession next year? Are we not? And then there's the U.S. election, which makes things even more uncertain as to where things are going to land. So what would you say to young people, you know, in their 20s and 30s, even in their 40s? I have people who have not even started investing yet, and they're sitting on the sidelines. What do you tell those folks?
It's all about the growth, baby. Look at the dividend growth. Don't even get caught up in looking for a high yield. Because as I said, man, I've avoided Costco and Visa, two of them, because they paid about 1% or less dividend yield starting. But the growth is so quick and so massive. And if you go back 10 years, just 10 years, I think Visa had a barely over a 1% dividend yield. And if you just bought and held right now, your yield on cost from back then would be almost 4.25%. It's like 4.14%, I think, which just shows the power of buying a good business. Because, right, I mean, honestly, what the dividend really should be is a business saying, hey, we got all this money laying around that we really don't know what to do with, so we're going to give some of it back to you, the shareholder, where other businesses are kind of like struggling and they probably should cut the dividend, but because so many people expect them to pay it, they feel compelled to pay it. And that's when they start getting into borrowing cash or issuing shares or doing all kinds of funky things. So the best businesses just should be cash flow machines. They should be swimming and drowning in cash and just say, yeah, we don't know what we're going to do with all this money that we've got around. So like a Costco and a Visa, just to you know, again, to tie back to those two. But so that's what I would say. First, look at the dividend growth. Forget about if you're young, you got a lot of time. And as you said, there's geopolitical risk. There is, you know, government being fiscally irresponsible, spending too much money. You know, they can turn on the printing presses and inflate and devalue the currency. So I think dividend stocks, the solid good businesses, can be kind of a bulwark against that, where, man, they're just going to likely be good businesses into the future. And they could provide some stability against some of like market volatility and some of the more, you know, like the hot stocks. And wait, where's Peter Lynch, right? He always said he stays away from hot stocks and hot industries. So thankfully I took Peter's advice and I did not buy Nvidia. So
thank you,
Peter Lynch, for that one.
Thank you.
I say it in jest. Yeah. I mean, but that, you know, I'll just end this whole string of, you know, vomiting thought with that, is that there is no one hard, fast rule. I know there's Peter Lynch quotes, Ray Dalio quotes, Howard Marks, Buffett, Munger. They all have quotes, but nothing is just all-encompassing and concrete. There's always shades of gray to everything. So always take, you know, grains of salt, I guess, with that. But yeah. Those are some great minds, though, that I enjoy. I've learned a lot from all those names. So, yeah.
So that's a good lesson for folks that are waiting on the sidelines, right? What I tell people is, don't wait. Like, if you've got money to invest, or if you've got money sitting in a bank account, you know, 2 years ago, I would say earning nothing. Now the interest rates have gone up, so you're earning something. But I still think you can do better in the long term with dividend stocks, as opposed to keeping your money in a checking account, for example. So I would tell people, I mean, don't wait. I wish I started 20 years earlier, right? I only started in 2000. I wish I started even sooner. I think I'd be in a much even better financial position than I am today. And a lot of folks that I talk to, you know, when they take the Simply Investing course, they're like, I wish I did this 15 years ago. Should have started sooner. Because that gives you time to reinvest the dividends and to compound the dividend growth over time. Now, what about, I'm going to give you one more objection that I hear all the time when it comes to dividends. And people say, well, dividends are not guaranteed. Look at what happened recently with Walgreens, right? They reduced the dividend. So what happens if I buy a whole bunch of dividend stocks and then the dividend gets cut? So what do you say to those people?
Yeah, it's absolutely. I would agree with them right off there. 110%. The dividends are not guaranteed. They can go away at any time for any reason. The board can just vote to, we don't want to pay it anymore, right? Like, so you have to like the business and be invested in the business. And a little game that I like to play is I look at like the stocks I hold. And I think if all things were equal, and because a lot of times when a dividend is cut, it's because a business is struggling. Berkshire Hathaway actually paid a dividend one time in 1967. It was 10 cents a share. And Warren, he likes to say he was in the men's room when that happened, but you know, he was part of it. And they decided that they wanted to keep more of the money because they felt that they could turn a dollar of retained earnings into more than a dollar of market value than you probably could, you know. So, but so when a dividend is cut, it's usually because the business is, something's fundamentally wrong with it. Something's going on with the business. I'm not aware of a business that said, hey, we're actually growing really fast, but we think if we cut the dividend, we can grow even faster. So you always have to be aware of that. And you know, for me, one telltale sign is sustained free cash flow payout ratio over 100%. If it's over 100%, the free cash flow payout ratio, not earnings per share, that's really a big red flag for me. PepsiCo just went through having that, but they're doing this Pep Plus thing. So they have a CEO that came aboard, Ramon LaGuardia, in 2018. And he wanted to just kind of overhaul the business and really spend a lot of money. So that ate up a lot of their free cash flow. So it kind of, you know, it, yes, it was over, but they're so big, they were able to sustain a free cash flow payout ratio over 100% for a year or two. Coca-Cola went through it and I think like 15 or 16, 16 or 17, a couple of years, and then it comes back down. But if the business is having problems making money and selling, you know, if the sales are declining and the free cash flow payout ratio is way over 100%, that's a big red flag. So yeah, anytime that dividend can be cut, you know, they say they're not sacrosanct. So it's a one more reason why you should never, ever, ever buy just because of the dividend. Just buy the business, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no guarantees in life for anything. Like, we don't know, right? Is the market going to crash next week, next month, or next year? I have no idea. Or is it going to... Is it going to keep going up? That's right. We can get some stuff on sale. When the stock prices come down, the yield comes up. I think one of the things that might provide some solace is if you look at some of the dividend aristocrats or the dividend kings. So now you're looking at companies, in the case of the dividend kings, who have had 50 years of consecutive dividend increases. So that is... You think back in the last 50 years, how many market crashes we've had, how many market downturns, how many different governments we've gone through, right? So governments will change, the parties will change, but companies like these, the dividend kings, have continued to not only pay a dividend, but to grow it every year. So sure, the dividend isn't guaranteed, but when I look at somebody like, I don't know, Coca-Cola, I think they're at, 52 or 53 years of consecutive dividend increases. I have some degree of confidence that they're going to pay me a dividend next year.
Yeah, we just had one. I don't mean to cut you off. J&J just raised their dividend for the 62nd consecutive year.
Wow.
Today they did.
That is incredible.
Yeah, and you know, it's like you said it so well. I don't know how to build on it. That we should actually, a better word is to just use expected, right? Because we can expect things, but again, like you said, nothing is guaranteed. Things can change tomorrow, next year. 10 years from now, things are actually always changing. And if you look at, and even these dividend kings is like, you know, they say that the business has a moat, and the bigger the moat, the better, but their businesses are always under attack. It's the nature of capitalism. And, you know, speaking of capitalism, when you think about it, if you buy an index fund, like if you buying individual stocks, yes, they are more risky, because if you buy an index, buying the whole stock market or the big, you know, roughly the 500 biggest in the United States, you're investing in capitalism, and earnings over time will generally go up. They always go up. Why? Because businesses improve, businesses innovate. If managers are not growing earnings for a specific business, they're going to get fired, and they're going to bring in somebody that will grow earnings and figure it out. So that's why, you know, and sometimes those can be great, great opportunities. And you know, actually, some of the best opportunities are always going to be there, because there's always going to be people doing dumb things. And people doing dumb things gives us some of the best opportunity. And you just got to look out for that. So,
and buying opportunities.
I'm sorry. I think I cut you off, man. I'm so sorry.
No, that's good. You raised a good point, because you mentioned about index funds. And personally, I don't invest in them, but that doesn't mean anyone else shouldn't. People should do what they think is right for themselves. But what's important there is the diversification, right? So I'm not investing in three dividend stocks. I don't have all my money in just three stocks, because for what we talked about before, the dividend could get cut, dividend could get reduced. And by having a basket of stocks, maybe 15, 20, 25 stocks, I can sleep better at night knowing that I'm much more diversified than I would be if I just had three dividend stocks.
You got to pay attention, though. If you're going to go the individual route, man, you got to pay attention. You can't just let it ride. If you can let it ride with index funds, like with an SCHD, which is a dividend growth, or a VYM is a dividend growth. Or again, my wife, we just started a Roth IRA for her. And I kind of want to see if she'll outperform me. So we're putting money into VTI. It's a Vanguard Total Index. Yeah, total market, not total index, total market fund. You're essentially buying the entire investable U.S. stock market, almost 4,000 businesses, itty bitty little slivers of those businesses, but you don't have to do anything. You don't have to learn any, you know, financial ratios, any lingo, nothing, no accounting. You just buy that and sit on it. And again, you're betting on, in that case, you're betting on America, you know, and the business power, or the if America is just going to keep doing well. So but yeah, as far that could be a way for beginners too. So maybe that's something if you're new to this and you're watching, is you say, okay, do I want to learn about looking and reading 10Ks, which is an annual report? Oh, you know, always trying to keep up with news on the business to see if things are shifting, or that moat is shrinking, or if there's marauders that are about to attack and enter the castle and bring it down. And if you don't want to spend that time, perfectly fine. There's an awesome solution. It's an index fund. You just buy that. Don't have to do any of it. You just go on with your life. But as I tell my daughters, I'm like, you do have to invest. You don't have to like it, but you do have to invest if you want to become financially independent, which I think also helps to know why you're doing a thing. Because, you know, you and I can't just tell the viewer, hey, go and invest. If you don't have a reason or an understanding of at least why you're doing it, it's not going to stick with it. So, yeah, it's a little bit to look at, and you got to answer a few questions.
Yeah, and you got to stick with it for the long term, right? We're not day traders. We're not buying stocks, selling them the same day, selling it the next day. We're going to invest for the long term. And that's where you're going to start seeing the gains. Because in the short term, if I just look at today, stock prices go up and down all the time. Even during a week, you'll see lots of variation in the stock price. But when we look at 10, 15, 20 years down the road, and you look at, let's say, the S&P 500, you can see the chart just does this over the long term. And that's what we want to take advantage of. We do have listeners who invest in individual stocks. What is a good number of stocks to hold? Because I know you do both. So, you know, we said three stocks isn't enough. Is there a range that you're happy with?
Yeah, so it's been evolving. Like Charlie Munger does three, or he did three. God rest his soul. He did three. You know, it worked for him. I don't think I would be comfortable with just that, because I'm always trying to question myself and say, like, what if I'm wrong? Like, what am I missing? Like, there's got to be something I'm missing. What is it? And honestly, so in the individual, as I was telling you earlier, there on the channel, I share three different portfolios. I have a self-directed IRA where I actually, in April of 2020, I pulled $30,000 from my retirement account and rolled it into the self-directed one where I can buy individual stocks, penny stocks if I wanted to. Not going to do it, but we have that. And then we have our Roth, our IRA. If you're in Canada watching and you don't know what a Roth is, it's post-tax dollars. So I've already paid tax on the dollars and I'm putting it in there. And the growth, I will never pay tax on after 59 and a half. That's the rules here for now.
So we have the same equivalent, the RRSP.
Okay, that's what it is. Yeah. So anyway, to get back onto the how many stocks, I'm currently trying to get on to 20 or less individual holdings. And the last little while, I've been doing something where if I want to buy something, I either have to sell something. I can't just keep adding and adding and adding. Because at one point, I was like 55 positions. And it's so easy to just buy and buy and buy. And then the bigger you get, the more your returns are going to look like the whole market return, right? Because you're kind of building an index fund of sorts. And it's not really going to move the needle when you have 50 stocks and you're just so diversified across them. But again, there's no one exact answer. There's, you know, more than one way to get to financial heaven. And for me, I'm comfortable with trying to get it under 20. Not quite there yet. I do have a couple ETFs, SCHD and SCHG is a growth. It's a newer position just because for me, I don't really understand technology that much. I had been in Intel for a while. And I ended up selling Intel as it ran up again. I sat in it all the way to like 26, 27 a share. And then it went back up to mid 40s where my cost basis was. And I don't know what makes a Intel chip better than an Nvidia chip or a Texas Instruments chip. I just don't have that knowledge. And I know there's people that do. But now potato chips, I understand those chips. So I can tell and I see so many people eat Doritos, which is Frito-Lay, which is owned by PepsiCo. And now that I understand. And, you know, people, whatever. People want to say like the weight loss drugs are going to affect it and things like that could happen. But I don't think I'm not going to bet against the diets of the American consumer, the eater. So things like that, trying to figure out what I really understand and kind of the whole game with it is if you want to do the individual route is trying to think of do I have a reasonable expectation of where this business might be in 5 or 10 years? And if where their position is now in the market, do I think they'll at least hold it or even grow it? And when I look at a lot of the tech companies, I have no idea. So for that reason, I still want to have a little bit extra exposure than what's in our 401k. So that started a position in SCHG. And I'll ask you, so I want to guess, I may all play a little game here. I'm wondering, do you not invest in ETFs because you want to have more control over what you're investing in? I will say sometimes as I look through the things I hold in an ETF, I'm like, yeah, I would never buy this, but oh, I guess I own it.
Yeah. And that's exactly it, right? I used to own index funds and ETFs, even mutual funds. This is going way back 20 plus years. The mutual funds, obviously, the fees are too high, right? If you're, especially in Canada, the average MER fee is 2.2%.
What? That'll add up. 2.2?
Yes, the average across actively managed mutual funds.
Wow.
Right. So that was not going to work for me. Index funds, ETFs, the fees are much lower. But I have, and I'm not going to go through it in detail right now. So I have what I call the 12 rules of simply investing. And we touched on a whole bunch of things, right? I'm going to look at the debt level. What is the PE ratio for the company today? What's the payout ratio, right? If it's over 100%, that's a red flag. We're going to look at the history of the dividend growth, right? And a whole bunch of things. And so that helps me to select only quality dividend stocks. Not just any dividend stock, because there's some bad ones out there too. So I just want to stick with quality ones. And then I only want to buy them when they're undervalued, right? So the way I do it is I look at the current dividend yield and compare it to the 20-year average dividend yield. If the current yield is higher than the company's 20-year average, then I consider the stock to be priced low, undervalued. So I'm going to buy a stock when it's undervalued and when it's a quality stock. And what I find with index funds and ETFs, because you're buying everything in the market, that not everything today is undervalued. Some stocks are overpriced. And not every stock today is a quality stock. Some of them have debt, 200, 300% debt. Payout ratio is 150%. I don't want to touch those stocks. So if I wouldn't buy them individually, I don't want to buy them through an index fund or an ETF. I know the fees are lower, but there's still a fee nevertheless. And for beginners, it's not an issue. I've done a whole episode on that. If you're starting with $5,000, $1,000, start investing, not an issue. When you get to $200, $300, $500,000 portfolio, and it's sitting in an index fund, an ETF, those fees are going to add up. You put $500,000 in there over the next 25 years, you're going to pay almost, I'm looking at my numbers here, just so I don't make a mistake. Because I know someone's going to come up with a comment. $500,000 over 25 years, where the MER is 0.5, so half of a percentage point, you will pay over $375,000 in fees. That's a lot of money. I would rather keep that money for myself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's So that was just answering your question, right? So that's the reason why I tend to stay away from it, and I prefer the individual stock route. But I've got a question for you, because sure, this comes up on my comments as well, right? On the video, the podcast channel. And people will say that investing is complicated. So it just overwhelms people and they think it's complicated. So they just don't do it. Like, you know what? I'm going to put the money in a term deposit or a CD, or in Canada, we call them GICs, fixed interest rate for 5 years. I'm just going to leave the money in there because that's not complicated, but investing in stocks is complicated. Do you think investing is complicated?
I think people make it complicated. I think some people make it intentionally complicated because they're trying to sell a product and they don't want the masses to think that they have a shot at competing with them or understanding what they're doing. You know, they kind of want to be like the high priests of investing and finance, and they're the ones that are going to decipher what all this stuff means. And it's just buying and holding good businesses for what, you know, we do. It's funny. I was thinking, I was at a dinner for my youngest is a bowler for her high school bowling team. And it came up, there was a mother talking of one of the mothers of on her team was talking about investing, and I heard it. And, you know, so her and I got to talking, and all of a sudden it was like we were in our own little world. But it turns out that she's a trader, a day trader, like a hyper day trader. She's telling me that sometimes she holds things for maybe 30 minutes. Like, wow. I was like, well, I'm planning on trying to hold stuff for 30 years. So I think we're, you know, we're North and South Pole here, but still had a good conversation. But I think that is very nerve-wracking. I think that can be complicated, trying to look at the charts and understand short-term price fluctuations. But, you know, like you said, and it's what you share in your course, which is just to simplify it and show that it's not complicated if you look for a few specific things that are some of the big... Now, yeah, we can get into the weeds, of course. I mean, you can get into the notes of sub-notes in the annual report, but... you don't have to go that deep. There's just some really simple things to tell. And like building off your point about Walgreens, they've been having problems for a while. And the beauty of it is what you do and what we share in our communities is that, you know, we're all kind of keeping our ear to the ground and looking for some things. And we can all be here to help each other. But it's not that complicated. It's just some people make it and, I don't know, kind of wish it to be complicated. But
yeah, I don't absolutely. Think I tell people it's not rocket science. It's not. I had both of my kids start when they were 9 years old. My son and my daughter took the investing course. We sat down, we went through the whole thing. My son took it accidentally because I walked away from my computer while I still had it on. And he sat there and watched all of the video modules. And then the next day asked me whether Royal Bank was a better investment than the Bank of Montreal. He's 9 years old, and I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, I watched your course. And then my daughter, obviously, when she turned 9, wanted to follow in her brother's footsteps. And so I tell people it is not complicated. If a 9-year-old could figure this out and understand how to invest for the long term, then you can do it too. So I love what you're doing, Russ, with your video channel on YouTube, educating people on how to invest, because it isn't complicated. Now, I want to touch back on what we talked about before, because you brought up a very good point, right? You said it yourself. You don't understand technology. What's the difference between Intel and NVIDIA and AMD, right? And that is so important. Like that is, and again, I said I wasn't going to talk about the simple investing rules, and I won't. But rule number one is, do you understand the company and the product or services? Like, how is the company making money? And you don't need to be an expert in the company, but if you can't answer that question, then you probably shouldn't be investing in that company, even if it pays a dividend.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that or not?
Oh, 100% agree. And, you know, kind of just doubling back a little bit, they, you know, Warren Buffett, and I love this, he's said that actually having a really high IQ could be a detriment as an investor, that the better thing is to just have a good temperament. To, again, know what you're invested in and to hold, which can be some of the hardest things when you see something you hold go down 50%. And I think Berkshire Hathaway has gone down over 50% 3 different times. But you have to have that temperament. And a high IQ can, you know, you might want to sell out of it. You might overthink it and overcomplicate it. But yeah, and I'm trying to simplify things too. And again, with Intel, like I understand what they do, right? I know the chips make the computer go, but when I started looking into it and I started seeing like a whole world opened up of just industry slang, jargon, words that I had no idea meant. And I'm Googling this and then that, then I have to Google 2 more things and Google this. And now I'm like, and I just stopped. I was like, I think this goes in the too hard pile because I do not understand. If you show me 3 different manufacturers, like a TSM, Taiwan Semi chip, an NVIDIA chip, and an Intel chip, and say, okay, explain to me which one of these is superior and why. I'm like, I don't know. I can't do that. And, you know, but I understand PepsiCo. I understand one of my favorites is Nexstar Media Group, ticker NXST. I understand that broadcasting. So, yeah, if you don't understand it, you're just asking for trouble because if you see the stock price just drop a lot and you don't really understand the business, then you're probably going to feel like you might need to sell. And that's never a good thing, right? Ben Graham was the one that said the market is there to serve you, not to instruct you. Did I get that backwards?
Yes. I don't know. No, I think that was
I think
right.
I got it right. Yeah. So the market, you meaning that when you see prices drop, you should be like, oh, beautiful. This is what I've been waiting for, where other people, if the market is instructing you and you see prices drop, you're like, oh my God, panic, sell. So that's why you really need to know. And if you don't, then just push the easy button and, you know, index fund it, you know?
Yeah. And like you said, temperament is so key, right? This is so important. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What would you do? Let's say, you know, in 6 months, the market crashes. Are you going to sell everything?
I'm going to be excited as all get out because do you know who Jeff Foxworthy is? He was an old comedian.
Yes. Yeah, I remember.
He used to do redneck stuff. He's like, mm-hmm. you know, you're a redneck if this or this. And it's something that, you know, rednecks do, which is hillbilly person in the United States. Hopefully, if I haven't offended you yet, just hang on. I'll probably get to you too. Not you, just the viewer. But you know, you're a dividend investor when the market is green and going up and up and up, and you feel kind of sad about it. That's when you know you're a dividend investor. Because like I said, I had experienced 2020, April and May of 2020. I was upset. I remember people asking me like, what do you think about the market? Are you freaking out? I'm like, yes, I'm freaking out because I don't have any more money to buy stuff. And people didn't get it. They're like, wait, you're buying stuff, but the market's crashing. I'm like, I know. Everything's on sale. And I started explaining to people like, could you imagine if you had your eye on a pair of sweet shoes, some sweet kicks, and they were $150, and then you're walking by the store a month later and those same exact shoes are now $30? Who would say, no, I'm going to wait till they go back to $150? No, you'd be like, I'm going to probably buy six pair just in case I ruin those. So that's the same way I look at it. And it was the easiest thing to do. And having experienced it, and that was my feeling, was I kept running out of money. And I was telling my wife, I'm like, we need more money because McDonald's, you know, I was like, it was $145 a few days ago. I'm like, it's $138 now. This is crazy. Yeah. We need to buy more. And I still hold some of those shares of McDonald's. So yeah, I've been waiting. And again, dividend investing, you're sad when the market is going up in green, but you know, the silver lining is that your portfolio is now worth more money. So I guess it's a win-win.
Yeah. No, that's a great analogy. I like the shoe example. I think I'm going to use that in a future episode. That's a great analogy to explain the differences of when stock prices go up and when they come down. So it really is, from what I'm hearing from you, is it's a mindset. You can't panic when the market drops. You should see it as an opportunity. I've been doing this for over 24 years now as a dividend investor. So I've seen a lot of market crashes. 2008, 2009 financial crisis was not a good time. 9/11, they shut the New York Stock Exchange for I think like 3 days. That was not a good time. COVID, March of 2020, things tanked there as well. So I've seen a number of crashes over the last 24 years. And what I can tell you is, you just got to wait it out. Use it as an opportunity to build your portfolio and then just wait it out. Because the market does, it goes in cycles. It'll come down and it's going to go up. It'll come down and go up. Okay, just a couple of more questions. One thing that folks are interested in is there, and if you can give us one or two examples very quickly, is there something that you're interested in right now, dividend stock, something that you've got your eye on and why?
Yeah, always something. Actually, I'm looking at Starbucks. I have a position, I think 27, 8 shares or so. My kids have it. But yeah, that's one that I like the valuation. I like where it's at. But I think it may get into the 70s. As of this recording, it's 85, 86 range right there. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's been coming down. And I think a lot of it is China risk and the labor. You know, a lot of the different stores are trying to unionize. And that's, you know, labor is a cost of the business. So if you have to pay the labor more, that's probably going to compress margins. But yeah, so Starbucks is one. Johnson & Johnson is another that I've been buying, of course. And this is a good example. I was waiting for it to come back. And finally, so last week, I finished getting to 100 shares in my taxable account. I bought the last 20 shares at an average of about $150. And of course, this morning, as of this recording, it was around, I think, 143, like it hit high 143. So yeah, I wish I could have waited and I was psychic and I would have bought today instead. But again, this is why I'm buying the business. Intrinsic valuation is just a range. It's just a range. There is no, you can't go to two decimal places on it. So it's just a range and I feel it's at a good range. But yeah, so Johnson & Johnson, Nexstar Media, I'm always looking at maybe going to add a few more shares of that. I think I'm up to 107 right now of them. And, but yeah, I've always got my eye on everything. And it's kind of like, you know, as content creators, we always love to do, these are the best stocks to buy in 2024. And I always see that. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't know what's going to happen. And opportunity, you always have to be looking out for opportunity, because a lot of great portfolios were built not knowing that's how they were going to turn out. It's just when opportunity arose, you have to have the courage to buy, the conviction to buy, and you also have to have the most important thing is that money, that liquid capital to be able to use. So, yeah. So, I mean, honestly, tomorrow morning, I could have a different answer for you. I don't know, but those are a few. Right now, I'm sure if I really think about it, there'll be more, but, yeah, those are some of the few that I'm looking
yeah,
at.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you for sharing that with us. That's extremely valuable.
How did I miss it? Costco and Visa. Those are two. Those are my number one and two that if the market were to flash crash that I'm going to buy. Mm-hmm. I still think Costco is way too high. I kind of, you know, I looked at its 5-year PE, took its current earnings per share, did a little multiplication, and that tells me that a good range would be maybe $575 to $600 a share. So I'm waiting for it to drop a little bit more. Apparently, they've been running up like a tech company, like an AI company. It's crazy. I'm still not exactly 100% sure why they've been so white hot as of late, but especially for a retailer, they're trading at almost 50 times earnings, which is a little high for me, but it might be a little too fundamental there. But anyway, so Costco and Visa are the two that I don't own outright. I do have exposure inside of mutual funds, but those are two that I wish to own outright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's great. So I'm going to, because I want to respect our time here as well. So I have one more question, then we'll wrap it up. So what advice do you have for the folks out there? Somebody who's just graduated college, they've got their first job, never invested a penny anywhere. What advice do you have for them?
Education is always going to, you always have to be learning. That's something I've learned. As somebody that's never been to college, you know, I've just done a lot of self-educating, self-teaching, which sometimes takes a little bit longer. But, you know, I guess the biggest piece of advice that I would give that I love, and I've done a lot of studying of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, is to invest in your own earning power of yourself. Your skill, whatever skill you teach yourself, can't be taken away. It can't be inflated away. Nobody's going to come and steal it from you in the middle of the night. You're not going to lose it. Hopefully, you're not going to lose it. So any skill that's in demand that you can teach yourself, you know, if you're, I got a guitar on the wall behind me, if you're the best guitar player around, or if you're a great neurosurgeon or heart surgeon, whatever it may be, if you're the best at something or you're highly in demand, even if the dollar went away, if we started trading seashells as currency, well, then you're going to get more seashells because your skills are more in demand and you're going to be able to feed yourself and your family. So I think the skills that you can teach yourself that increase your own earning power is probably the number one best thing. And then just understand what you're buying. I guess that's the red pill, blue pill. Like, you know, if we were in the Matrix, do you want to look, go down the rabbit hole of individual stocks, or you want to just go back to sleep and, you know, ETF it? So that's kind of where you'd have to ask, am I going to put the time in and effort to pay attention and learn how to look at individual businesses? Because, right, that's what we're buying when we buy a stock. You should think of it as, is, would I buy this whole business here right now for this price? Don't even think of it as a stock. Think of it as you're buying the whole entire business. And if you don't want, if it's too complicated and you're like, I don't think I'm gonna have time for that, ETF it, you know, you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's
great. Depending on what ETF. We won't get into that, but I shouldn't give that blanket advice.
but that's good advice. I think the biggest thing is education. So if you can educate yourself on how to invest, what to invest in, I think that's going to get you very far. And like we've said before in this conversation, it's not rocket science. It may seem complicated, but once you get started, you'll understand it isn't. Right? I've been doing it for 24 years. Russ, we're talking to you right now. You've been doing it for many years. So if you and I can do it, I think a lot of people can do it. It's just getting the education to get started, right, on how to invest. So, Russ, where can people find out more about you? We'll put all the links down below, but if you want to let us know where they can get in touch with you, learn more from you, where do they go?
Yeah, I have a website, dapperdividends.com. That's the main thing. But, you know, Twitter, I've gone there a couple times a day. I can't be like some of these other people that tweet 85 times a day. I just don't. I do like twice. I'll get on it in the morning, answer a few, and then at night and whatever. But RustyRam78 on Twitter, and then just YouTube, just type in Dapper Dividends and you'll find me. So
yeah, I'm gonna suggest the YouTube channel because I've been watching Russ's videos. It's great. If you guys, anybody out there want to learn more about dividends and want to hear it from someone else other than me, because that's all I talk about. Russ does a great job in relaying information and helping people learn and how to become better dividend investors. So Russ, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it for coming on our podcast. We had a great time.
Kenwell, thank you so very much.